I'm your host, Matt, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Lorna.
Hello.
If you never listened to the podcast before, one of us does a report on a topic. What are you laughing at? Moment event.
Sorry, we always have trouble with that sentence, but it sounded like you were saying she never listened to the podcast before.
She never listens to the podcast.
And that's why I was like, what?
If you've never listened to the podcast before,
yep.
One of us does a topic on an event, moment.
A report.
Yeah. A report on a topic, event, moment, person from history. Tends to be something you might not have heard of, or possibly something you do know about. We'll try and shine a bit of new light on it.
We will.
We are quite tired today.
Oh, we are sleepy.
It's a Sunday, sleepy Sunday
sleepy
afternoon.
Sleepy Sunday. And, extra sleepy.
I'm going to be slurring words. But I've got a...
We're in delirious
an absolute
as well.
Scintillating... Oh, what's happened here? Absolute scintillating report for you. Yeah?
Yep. I'm ready. I'm on board.
You're
keen,
on board. I need
keen
to
bean.
Turn it up a little bit. I can't even read it. I don't know what's happened.
It's just all gone in different lines. It's all right.
So, today I'm going to do a report on a man... Many regard as the greatest director, film director of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Can you name any? Who would you sort of put up there? Who do you think people put up there?
Quentin Tarantino.
No.
They love him.
No. Not really. No.
Michael Bay. Steven Spielberg.
No, not Michael Bay. Steven Spielberg, yeah.
Not Michael Bay. He did Transformers. They're good films.
No, they're not.
He did that other one that did really well.
Which one?
Titanic.
No, he didn't. James Cameron.
James Cameron, thank you. He did really well. The Titanic and Avatar.
Yeah, people...
I'm a legend in the film
Terminator.
Industry.
People think James Cameron's good.
Sofia Coppola.
Not the best ever.
Noah Baumbach.
No, not the best ever.
Greta Gerwig.
No.
Your best ever.
Yeah, but these aren't... I'm talking about classics. Spielberg was a good one. Scorsese. Yeah, Cameron. Yeah, Scorsese.
Sofia Coppola's dad.
Yeah, Francis Ford Coppola
did
The Godfather. This is in the Western world, really. You're getting sort of these guys. There's a few good ones.
Agnes Varda.
Yeah. Yeah, Jean-Luc Godard.
Jean-Luc Godard.
If you're in France, they're sort of leading
lights.
Francois
Truffaut.
Yeah, yeah. Three good ones, huh?
Thank you.
But... Today we're going to talk about a man named Orson Welles. Do you know anything about Orson Welles?
The problem is no.
No.
And I get him
confused with
Oscar
Wilde.
Wilde.
I know you do, yeah. I think I used to do that when I was young. But no, that was Oscar Wilde. He wrote The Picture of Dorian Gray. Joke out right there.
Yeah.
And Orson Welles, filmmaker, different century.
Just don't know him. Did he do The Wind in the Willows?
No.
Is he any way associated with The Wind in the Willows?
You just like things beginning with W, I think.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
No, we've already talked about that, though.
Did he direct it?
No.
Into a ringing a bell.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was related to our Ken Kesey and the Merry Pranksters episode from maybe about
Ken's
10.
Book.
About 10 ago. Yeah, it was. But Orson Welles, I almost said Oscar Wilde, was born on May 6th, 1915.
Ooh.
Good month. In
I like May.
Kenosha, Wisconsin. I've never heard of Kenosha before.
Kenosha sounds cool. How can I say that? Oh, Kenosha. Oh,
K-E-N-O-S-H-A.
Wisconsin.
I spelled Wisconsin wrong.
You did.
Never mind. lots of N's in my Wisconsin. His dad was an inventor. Who had many, I've written, who had many a lot of money.
Well, you started well.
He'd made a lot of money when he invented a carbide lamp for bicycles. I'm not
What's
sure what
carbide
that is.
Lamp?
It's just like a lamp on the front, maybe.
Oh, cool.
I think so.
I love that.
Through him, Orson met actors and sportsmen. I'm going to get better, honestly. I can barely read what I'm throwing here.
Can I tell you something funny, though? So, at work, they do something called, like, a needs assessment or a needs reassessment. And I was looking through a spreadsheet of some data, and they've shortened it. But whoever shortened it has not thought it through, because they've shortened it to needs ass.
Needs ass.
Yeah.
Right. I do that sometimes. Oh, that was making funny. Shorthand notes. I write ass instead of assessment.
No, but then you look through and you're like, hmm? Because you could put a person's name in front of it and then it's like, Judith's ass instead
Judith
of Judith.
Needs ass.
Yeah. Instead of Judith's needs assessment.
So yeah, through his father, Orson Welles.
Yeah, back to...
Met actors and sportsmen. His
mom, no women.
Sports people.
Thank you.
His mum was a concert pianist and taught Orson how to play the piano and the violin.
How did he meet actors and sports people?
Because
there
was
and
them circles, I think.
He's in that circle through inventing a bike light.
Yeah.
Fair
He's
enough.
Big money. Big dollar.
Good on him.
Big dollar Wells, that's what we call him. And his mum was sort of artsy
oh,
as well.
Goodness
so
sake.
They're all going in.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. His parents separated when he was about 6, and his mum died when he was 9. His dad's business began to falter, and he allegedly turned to drinking, and his dad actually committed suicide when he was about 13.
You're joking.
Wells, when Orson was 13.
I think that must be money-related with the business going
sour. Yeah,
but we've my speculation.
Moved, yeah, quickly from one line. Orson went to live with someone called Maurice Bernstein. Bernstein?
Ooh!
Who...
I know that name.
Do you?
Is he famous?
I don't know. I don't know if he's a...
Bernstein and something.
I thought, is Maurice a boy or a girl?
A boy.
I've written she.
Brilliant.
I obviously didn't read the name very well. Maurice. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, well, maybe
So they became his official guardian at 15, and Bernstein...
Maurice did.
Yeah, Maurice saw talent in Wells, as I'm going to call him now, and enrolled him in the Todd School in Woodstock, Illinois, where he first discovered his passion for the theater. I've written bravo, brava. That's from a classic film known as High School Musical.
Great film.
After school, Wells went to Dublin for a little bit.
Really? I want to go to Dublin.
Yeah, well, you can...
Could have asked him for some tips.
The way he actually, his little story in Dublin's quite interesting. There's probably a lot more in it, but I'm getting to the good bit instead. And he performed in a production of, I've written Jesus at the Gate Theatre. I'm not sure what that is. But when he arrived in Ireland, he declared himself as a Broadway star. And I'm not sure if he actually had any Broadway experience at this time. But he did eventually get on Broadway at the age of just 19.
That is so soon.
Performing as Tybalt, is that
Tybalt.
Right? Tybalt in Romeo and Juliet.
So that's Romeo's mate.
Yeah, one
Tybalt.
Of them. Yeah. So he had a
his
pretty
best
big...
mate. Is, he's got two, Annie. Is it?
Not sure.
Or is he a bad guy? Who knows? There's a few.
There's a few. Anyway, he was a pretty big part in Romeo and
that
Juliet
is a pretty
on
big
Broadway.
He's got a
19.
Name. Not being funny. He's not
I
like
know.
A tree or something.
Yeah.
He could have been a tree.
In my year 6 production, I was a sailor. Came on for about 12 seconds.
I was an undertaker.
Were you?
Yeah, I carried Ebenezer
you were the
Scrooge's
undertaker.
Coffin.
You did a Scrooge, you did a Christmas Carol.
Yeah, one year, and then the next year I was a witch.
Right. What was that for? Oz.
I can't remember what that one was. Mm. I weren't happy to be a witch. I weren't happy to be an undertaker. I'm the star of the show.
You clearly weren't.
Well, I should have been.
Who was
I
Ebenezer?
I should have been Ebenezer.
I was not given much. I just had to brush. I think I just brushed the back of a...
As a sailor.
Like, it was on a boat at this point, I think.
Were you bothered?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, but yeah. I was happy to be
you,
on stage.
You were invested
this
in
is where my
primary school,
passion
aren't you?
For the theatre came.
From your sailor times
yeah.
in year 6.
Anyway, we're back to Wells. He briefly served as a drama coach at the Todd School, where he had learnt himself, and also co-edited 4 volumes of plays by Shakespeare. So he's doing a bit of stuff.
He is. He's
a lot of theatre.
William Shakespeare, isn't he?
Yeah. A man named John Houseman.
I like that name.
Noticed Wells and cast him in his Federal Theatre Project. So the Federal Theatre Project was one of the work relief arts projects established by the New Deal. So around this time.
Alphabet agencies.
A major nationwide social program intended to spark economic recovery during the 1930s.
Yep.
I feel like a lot of people tend to overlook his theatre stuff because of what he did afterwards.
But you think it's still worth it?
And they did, in the biographies that I read about his life, they did sort of brush over it a little bit, like I just did. But he did a lot, and apparently he's very, very good in theatre. He directed an all-African-American Macbeth. He did the French farce,
cool.
The Italian Straw Hat, and he did Dr. Faustus. And apparently he sort of credited his... credited with injecting new life into old classics. So he was, well, yeah.
He's a bit of an experimenter,
isn't
he?
He's a bit of a prodigy, a child prodigy, really. Because in 1937, at the age of just 21, he and Houseman formed the Mercury Theatre. I think that's like a production company. So they'd fallen out with the Federal Theatre Project over some attempt to shut down one of his productions, called The Cradle Will Rock. And this new company, Mercury Theatre, their first production was Julius Caesar in contemporary dress and with tones of fascist Italy. And that was a huge success.
Wow. So controversial. Very of the time. Love it.
Yeah, and he was directing a lot of these at just like 21, I think. They had lots of other successes, including The Shoemaker's Holiday, which Wells rewrote as well, Heartbreak House, and with Wells convincingly playing an elderly gentleman. Mm. And he also found time to play The Shadow on the radio. Yeah, the popular sort of it was one of the first superhero sort of characters, The Shadow.
Something's coming back to me.
Yeah.
Is Orson Welles linked to War of the Worlds?
Maybe.
Thank you.
So, before long, the Mercury had their own weekly radio programme, and the Mercury Theatre on the Air, as it was known, ran on CBS from 1938 to 1940, and then again in 1946. I think that was a brief stint. So, I was going to say, do you know why that's significant, that they had a radio programme?
I've got it.
You've just nailed it, haven't you? I'll tell you. So, apparently, the show was praised, but ratings were still quite low for this, because they're doing, like, theatre productions on the air.
Yeah.
So, on October 30th, 1938, Orson decided to make a change. And this could be a whole pod by itself, really, but I'll briefly detail it. Wells decided to air his own adaptation of H.G. Wells, no relation, H.G. Wells' novel, The War of the Worlds. Popular sci-fi novel.
Scary film, to be honest.
Oh yeah, Tom Cruise film, 2005,
yep,
I think.
My family have never watched it to the end.
Really? I don't think it's that scary. This show, this War
we
of the
were
Worlds,
young. We were yeah. young. Faye was crying.
Oh, hi Faye. The show of War of the Worlds simulated a news broadcast with Wells narrating, describing in detail the alien invasion. Did I say alien then? Alien invasion and attack on New Jersey. Supposedly, although this has been debated, there was widespread panic with people believing the broadcast to be true. And it became quite a famous moment, and it's still remembered today.
I'm not sure if that idea of widespread panic is just a bit of a hype, and then it makes the story even bigger. I think it's a very good marketing technique.
That is what, yeah, people say that not a lot of people, because they said so many times throughout the broadcast that it wasn't true.
And people wouldn't just tune in and be like, oh, I'd be like, what are they on about for a while first? But I'm like, oh my God, aliens.
I'd be like, is this Orson Welles? Orson Welles was known after this stunt.
Very good marketing, Orsi.
Orsi's not his name.
I know, I shortened it. Give him a nickname. It's hard because otherwise you call him Orr. And that's rubbish. That's
I call
like
him Wells. I call him Mr. Wells.
Okay.
It wasn't long before Hollywood came a knocking. Knock, knock on a. Oh, I've wrote knock, knock. Who's there? It's Hollywood, baby.
I did see that and I was mortified.
Some of the things are right. I'm question why I write them afterwards. But Mr. Wells answered the door.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, hi, Hollywood, baby.
Hi, Hollywood, baby. In 1939, the Mercury Theatre collapsed due to economic problems, and Wells actually went to Hollywood. This is, I read in one.
Wait, when did it start? Sorry to interrupt you.
I think 1937. So it was only a 2-year stint, but it was very successful, but it collapsed. Monetary problems.
How successful can it be, though, if it collapsed?
Maybe they would try to be too ambitious.
I think so. Calm it, Orsi.
But he actually went to Hollywood to find the cash to resurrect it.
Oh, I like that. From what I should have let you finish your sentence.
Yeah. From what I can tell, he never did. Even though I did mention that he came on air on 1940, back in 1946 again.
Yeah.
So maybe briefly resurrected.
Maybe it came under the name reruns. And it might have just been that rather than the whole company and all sorts. It could have been anything. We don't really know,
I didn't look into it because that's not what I'm talking about.
No.
But Wells would continue to do some theatre, just before we move on to his film. He did Native Son in 1940. He had an unhappy attempt to stage Around the World in 80 Days in 1946, and an even worse time staging King Lear in 1956.
Why is he having a bad time?
Just, I can't remember if it was like production problems, like critical response, lots of different things.
I like Around the World in 80 Days. I think Piers Brosnan did it.
The film?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've seen that.
That was all on Broadway, by the way. He did do some theatre later on overseas.
Okay.
In the 1950s, he staged Moby Dick in England.
Ooh!
Directed by Laurence Olivier.
Oh, Olivier!
I got that wrong. He was directed by Laurence Olivier in the London production of Rhinoceros. Mm. And he also wrote a script for the Roland Petit Ballet.
Oh, I like that.
So he's getting
Petit Ballet.
He's got his hands, his grubby little Wells mitts in lots of different puddings.
Oh, you don't say grubby little Wells. Do you not like it?
No, I like him a lot. He's got lovely little mitts.
He's got his fingers in all the pies.
He's got fingers in all the pies. Yeah, but...
grubby little mitts in all the...
He's got mitts.
Cheese and onion pies.
But really, it's 1939 now. That was just extra. That's what he's doing on the side.
Yeah, he's a busy boy.
Hollywood's knocking. Do you remember Knock Knock? It's Hollywood, baby. And it's the movies. And that's what we're going to focus on for now.
Yeah. War of the Worlds.
No.
It's been.
Yeah, it's been. In 1939, 1940, he signed a deal with RKO, which is a company, one of the big five, I think.
You say RKO or is it R-K-O?
R-K-O.
Thank you.
Yeah. Contract worth $225,000. And that was only to write, direct, and produce two films.
Which was
his contract. Well, here, I'm going to tell you in a sec.
Okay.
He'd have a total creative control and he'd receive a percentage of the profits.
That's what you want.
At the time, it was the most lucrative deal ever made with an unproven filmmaker. He's never made
He's never made a film.
He's also 24 years old.
Wow.
So he's a...
Age is just a number.
Age is just a number, but he's achieved a lot in 24 years, to be honest. He originally started to adapt Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. It's a book. He stopped, however, and this would be something that would happen quite often in the years to come. And I'm going to get onto that later on, if we've got time. But we'll get to that. So instead of that film, he began to focus on a new project, and it was modelled after the life and work of the publishing magnate William Randolph Hearst, and the film was called Citizen Kane.
Has that been remade?
No.
You've seen that film?
Yes.
I've not seen that film.
No.
I want to watch it.
Okay. I'll
tell you. I think it's on my list. Don't ruin it.
I'm not going to ruin it. The film told the story of a newspaper man, Charles Foster Kane.
And he's a citizen.
Played by Wells. Tracing his rise to power and his eventual corruption that power.
He played the main character in his own film.
Yeah, he wrote it, produced
what
it, directed
cool
it.
What a cool guy.
And he's the main guy. I like how the guy sort of based it has got three names, so he's given him three names as well. Mm. It was William Randolph Hearst, and he's Charles Foster Kane. Charles Kane. Apparently, Hearst was outraged by the film and refused to allow mention of the movie in any of his newspapers. And apparently this supposedly helped to drive down the box office numbers of the film. And it wasn't a big hit at the time when it was released.
I'm not surprised.
Commercially, anyway.
You need all the help you can get.
However, Kane, the film, was and is seen as a revolutionary work of art.
That's why I need to watch it.
It was nominated for a total of 9 Academy Awards, winning just one, though, for Best Screenplay, with Wells sharing that with Herman J. Mankiewicz. And the fact that it didn't win Best Picture or indeed Best Director is perhaps the most famous Oscar snub in history.
Really?
I think it was called How Green Is My Valley? One.
Oh, really?
That year, yeah.
Any other Oscar snubs?
I think Crash won, I think, earlier in the late 90s, early 2000s, which wasn't a great film. I'm struggling to come up with ones off the top of my head from more recently. There's quite a few from sort of the 90s, like Shakespeare in Love won, but I can't remember that was over. I don't know if that was over Saving Private Ryan. Maybe.
Oh, really?
Something like
Wow-wee.
That. Can't remember.
I'm not going to quote you.
Just look it up. You'll find some snubs. The techniques that Wells used in filming the movie were seen as pioneering. I'm not going to get into all this, but it continues, Citizen Kane, to top greatest films of all time lists, and is considered one of the greatest films ever made. So,
what do you think tops the greatest film of all time list? I understand there's a lot of lists, but what do you
so think in terms of like
is usually top three?
Well, it depends, but this is one that a lot of critics
will be
still
in top
say
20.
No, top two, top three.
You're joking. Top two, top three. I thought
that's what I'm
like
saying. No, this
20.
Is like it.
And like
it'd
be up there
quickly.
With like.
Go on.
Shawshank Redemption.
Well, that's. I think there's different types of lists. Top of like IMDb is I think the Shawshank Redemption, but this and I think it was Vertigo. I can't remember if it's Vertigo or North by Northwest, which are like Alfred Hitchcock movies.
Oh, I should have said him. I know him. He did Psycho.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a weird guy, apparently.
They're sort of, I can't remember which one, battled it out.
Film about birds.
Birds, it was the birds. Huh. That and this film sort of swap places. There's quite like a, I don't know if it's a BFI top list or something.
Oh,
like
I need
that.
To check out the list.
Yeah. Or AFI, I'm not sure, American Film Institute. So,
no, I want B.
Okay. But yeah, so pretty quickly actually afterwards, it was sort of, people like, this is the best film that's ever been made.
Wow.
24 years old, debut film.
And they didn't even do very well because that guy wouldn't put it in his newspaper.
Not just because of that, but
snob.
Yeah. Still got 9 nominations at the Academy Awards, but that doesn't mean anything. Years later, Wells declared, "I began at the top and have been making my way down ever since." And who, to be fair, can blame him for saying that? At the age of 24, he'd made perhaps the greatest film of all time. So what would happen next for him?
I think he'll make more films.
Well, he did try. So he set out to make his second film because he had a 2-film contract. And that film was called The Magnificent Ambersons, 1942. So he's making this film, which is a bit different. It's sort of back in time, period piece. And towards the end of his film, he set out on a trip to Rio de Janeiro to film a documentary there, which is called It's All True, which also was unfinished.
Wait, The Magnificent Ambersons was
finished. It's All True. He went out as this, so he's finished filming this, I think, on Nini, and then he's editing it.
And then he's
goes
gone out
to
do
Rio,
a documentary.
Pops back, and he returns to discover what? What's he discovered? I don't want you to read it before I give it away.
I don't know.
He discovered that RKO had decided to edit the film themselves.
Magnificent Ambersons.
Yeah, and. So his film was cut down from 132 minutes to 88 minutes, which is...
50 minutes of film gone there.
Yeah.
What's the
so they've
that?
Cut it from over what? 2 hours to less than 90 minutes.
So that's because the films used to be 90 minutes, looking for their audience.
I think they were just... Yeah, they were looking for their
audience. He must have been fuming.
He was fuming. He went on to disown the movie. He was very angry.
I'm not surprised because that was your baby.
Yeah, and he's had, they give him like full creative control, and then they took it away.
That's like if I was knitting a hat and then someone came and took out a row.
Oh, I think this is worse, but okay.
No,
it's still your baby.
I way over them hats.
I know you do. They're good as well. If you want one, get in contact, Lauren will knit you one.
There's going to be a charge though.
Yeah, obviously.
Need to cover my wool costs. I'm going to knit my friend's one, actually.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Matching, all matching colours.
Oh, you should get different colours. That'd be good.
I've already got some green.
Though. Okay.
You've got the cost. So.
Got cost to think of. There was a bitter PR spat between RKO and Wells, and Wells was portrayed as a filmmaker with no appreciation for budgets and was difficult to work with. Some people have this idea that Wells was mistreated and victimised, and his career never truly recovered from this moment. So it did get released. I've seen it. Mm. I'm a big fan.
We were supposed to go and see it last
week. I had to go to a different party instead.
All the time.
I'm glad we didn't get to see that as well. It's good
I'm
fun.
Glad I didn't get to see Jurassic Park.
Oh, okay. That was another one which we were going to go and see, but we had other plans.
No.
I haven't watched it with other people.
Matt uninvited me to.
No, we could have gone a different time. We'll have this off-air conversation. Wells did stay in Hollywood for a few years, even after his bitter spat, marrying Rita Hayworth in 1943.
Rita!
What a name. That's a proper like classic actress's name. Rita
I think
Hayworth.
I've heard of her before.
Yeah, she's quite famous.
Rita!
Yeah, he married her in 1943. Starring in Jane Eyre. He would direct The Stranger, 1946. I'm going to reel off a few here. The Lady from Shanghai, 1946. And Macbeth, 1948. During the World War II, put some time in as a columnist at the liberal New York Post. And he also considered briefly a career in politics. In 1948, though, he divorced Hayworth, short marriage, and began a 10-year self-imposed exile from Hollywood. And he would return later, as I'll mention, but he was mainly away then from Hollywood for the rest of his life. Going to Europe, mainly, for making films.
Spare over here.
So he appeared in The Third Man, 1949, and directed the likes of Othello, loves his Shakespeare, 1952, Mr. Arkadin, 1955, went back to Hollywood to do A Touch of Evil, in 1958, but that was another box office bomb for him in Hollywood, as was his Frank Capra adaptation, The Trial, 1962. So he's actually made a number of those are sort of seen as like spectacular films now.
Yeah, but
Lady from Shanghai,
at the time he didn't do well.
Touch of Evil.
He definitely tainted his name.
Mm.
It's weird how they have that much power.
Yeah. But a lot of people say he's difficult, really difficult to work with.
Yeah, but I also think a lot of people, like, you can buy them. So if that company wanted to harm him that much and they could buy the side of, like, critics and newspapers and whatever. It's a bit of a...
He's had a tough time.
I was going to go really deep then, but I'm going to save it.
Okay.
So it's a sleepy Sunday.
Sleepy Sunday. He made some spectacular films. Shanghai, for example, Lady from Shanghai. Which made in Hollywood, and a few later ones, which I'll mention in a minute. And various people actually argue that they are like his best film, not Citizen
Better
Kane.
Citizen
yeah,
Kane.
That these. Because Citizen Kane has such
How
a
many have you seen?
Reputation. I've not seen many at all. I've only seen two. I've only seen his first two.
Oh, okay.
Not seen any other ones.
But because Citizen Kane has this reputation of being like the best.
Which is very difficult to live up to. You know, if you go and see it,
people
are like. Citizen Kane. It's supposed to be the greatest film. Like, what
do
you
expect? I think I thought that when I watched Shawshank Redemption. Like, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed
it. Thought, yeah, it's not
But
my
I was
film.
A bit like, oh, this is that the greatest it. Film ever. I need to enjoy this a lot.
Another box office bomb, Shawshank Redemption.
Really? Yeah. It's got that guy in it.
Morgan Freeman. Tim Robbins.
No. Have I made this up?
Are you thinking about a different film? Are you thinking of Green Mile?
No,
Tom
that's
Hanks.
Eminem.
No.
8 Mile.
That's 8 Mile.
Oh, I don't know what I'm thinking of.
Okay.
It doesn't matter.
I don't think you've seen the show. I was thinking
of the guy from...
I don't think it is Tim Robbins.
Of Mice and Men. George.
Gary Sinise.
Not George.
John Malkovich.
George.
Gary Sinise.
Gary Sinise.
Maybe it
is
him, but I don't think it's Tim Robbins.
Okay, made this up. But
anyway.
It's not 8 Mile, we know that.
It's Eminem rapping over the escape. Spoilers.
I liked 8 Mile, actually.
Yeah, good film.
Yeah.
Another interesting fact, 8 Mile, Eminem got nominated for Best Soundtrack, I think, or Best Song at the Oscars that year, 2002, 2003. And he didn't go, he just stayed in bed because he didn't think he was going to win, but he did.
I know, I've heard that.
Interesting.
That is good.
So anyway, back to Orson Welles.
Yes, back to our actual.
So like I said, he'd been directing a lot of films. He also acted in a lot of films at this period. Appearing in over 45 films besides his own. Some were great, and he was great in them. As I mentioned, The Third Man is sort of seen as an amazing film. In Compulsion from 1959, but he also made a ton of junk films. For example, Black Magic and The Tartars, I never heard of them. And these were sort of him cashing a check so that he could then go on to finance his own films, basically.
Yeah.
Such as The Chimes at Midnight, which is another one people say is sort of... one of his best films, which is a film based on various Shakespeare plays. Classic
yeah,
Wells.
Yeah, he loves Shakespeare.
Yeah. He just loves the Shakespeare
Who
in general.
Who doesn't love Shakespeare, though?
Some people.
Only like kids in school and like, I'm doing Macbeth.
I like Macbeth, though.
I like Macbeth.
I'm not a big Romeo and Juliet fan.
I'm not sure about Othello.
Okay.
I get a bit frustrated with that one because I'm like, everybody seems a bit silly.
I don't really like Twelfth. Is it Twelfth Night or A Midsummer's Night's Dream? I don't think I like that one that much either.
I think it's A Midsummer's
Night's
Dream.
Yeah, it's not. He's had a career, but he's struggling to. He's always having to finance his own films by acting in other people's films. It's not ideal.
Yeah.
Throughout the 70s, 1970s, he had a rough time. He had health issues, mainly because of his growing obesity. And at one point,
he's obese.
He weighed over 400 pounds at one point.
Can you swap that to kilograms for me?
A lot.
Okay, thank you.
He continued to work on many projects. He made Effies for Fake, which is another one people tout as sort of one of the best. But while he was doing this, he was doing a lot of trash films, to put it one way, to fund these projects.
Was he still acting in films now? Yeah. He's obese.
Yeah. So he earned a comfortable living. He earned a comfortable living, serving as a spokesman. Okay. Serving as a spokesman on television commercials for Paul Masson Wine.
Ooh.
He appeared on the ABC series Moonlighting and made a documentary called Filming Othello in 1979 about the making of his 1952 film.
Right.
He did move back to the US in the mid-1970s and was always on the TV circuit, like talk shows. He was always on. They're always like, greatest film director of all time. Come on, we'll have a chat. Like, you can tell us about these new films you're trying to... He basically always wanted to talk about, like, I'm making this new film.
Yeah.
Whatever. And he's a really great storyteller. His final film performance is sort of a famous one, infamous maybe, was a voiceover for The Transformers, the movie.
Why is that famous?
It's an animated film for, I think it was like, there was a TV show, cartoon show.
Yeah.
Transformers.
I really like Transformers.
And it was a movie that they made for out of that.
Shia LaBeouf in that one.
No. He played a Unicron, and it's become quite famous as sort of a bit of a sad end to his career, that this was he's like made the greatest film of all time, and then
there's nothing wrong with Transformers.
No, I know it's not, but it's just a bit, I don't know.
It could have gone out with a bang, and instead he's gone out with something that everyone's like,
weird like cartoon. That is,
yeah.
There's another few sad things, but in 1975 he received the Lifetime Achievement Award of the American Film Institute, and in 1985 he was awarded the Directors Guild of America's D.W. Griffith Award. We mentioned D.W. Griffith a few times.
Is he still alive?
No.
Orson Welles at this point?
No. Yeah.
Thank you. Not D.W. Griffith.
No, I was going to say he's definitely dead.
Yeah, he's one of the owners of the film companies.
And that's the organisation's highest honour, the Director Guild of America's D.W. Griffiths Award. So he's got two. They're like huge awards in like film.
He should be pleased with them. Everyone saying he had a sad ending with Transformers should just look at them awards and be like...
The problem, I think it was the American Film Institute one, which was like this sort of welcoming back, coming back to America, because he'd sort of just moved back, I think, around that time. Yeah. And everyone was like... I remember seeing the video, because I watched it in this documentary I watched at the time, and how everyone's like this guy, like, homecoming, like, this is amazing, it's like our best director ever. And then it's a bit sad because he's sort of like trying to sell his new film, which no one's financing. So he's like, I've got this to show you, this like clip to show you. He shows everyone this clip, and then he's just like, he's making like all these really awkward jokes, and then no one put any money towards it all. So.
Really?
And I'll get on to that in a minute.
Okay.
But he did an interview on October 10th, 1985. He was on the Merv Griffin show. 2 hours later, he was dead.
Why?
Not long after returning to his LA home, he suffered a heart attack and died, 1985. He'd been married 3 times and had children with each wife, so Virginia Nicholson, and he had a child called Christopher, Rita Hayworth, who I mentioned, a child called Rebecca, and his widow, who's Paola Mori, and their child was Beatrice.
Aww.
So that was sort of the life of Orson Welles.
What year did he die? 1985?
Yeah.
70?
Yeah. Yeah, was he born? When was he born?
Yeah, 1915.
I've just got a little bit to tell you about... Do you have time for me to do this?
Of course I do. Nothing but time for you, Matthew.
The unfinished films of Orson Welles have become a bit legendary in film history. As I mentioned a little bit, some of his films he didn't finish.
Yep.
I mentioned a couple. And some of these are actual films that he started, and some are just ideas that he had for films. So he, as I said, he went around the globe taking jobs to try and finance all these films, which were sort of like, he'd film them wherever he could, basically. So these films that he wanted to make, if he got the cash, he'd quickly film
bits
of them. Yeah. So the first one was Heart of Darkness, which mentioned, based on the book. But Akio didn't want to pay that much for a proposed debut. He'd adapted it for radio in 1938, the book, and he was going to star in it. He'd written the script, he'd got actors, he'd planned camera setups, he'd shot test footage, and then Akio were like, we're not spending this much money on a guy who we don't know. And they were concerned also that the war in Europe would harm the already over-budgeted film's box office chances. So that was his first duck shot. Is that a saying?
Yeah, we'll have it as one.
He's dead in the water. Dead in the water.
He's only just lost his company there.
That's his first film. Bam. We're not making it. Oh. But he made Citizen Kane instead. So then he, just after that, 1941, he wanted to make The Life of Christ. This is a very Wells thing to do. So after Kane, he thought about doing the story of Christ, with obviously himself as the titular JC.
Of course.
And instead of a Christian epic, this was going to be set in the 19th century US West. but then he decided instead to go and make The Magnificent Ambersons. Which, fair enough. That seems like a big one.
That one he finished.
Same time, this is an interesting story. In 1941, he had a film called Lady Killer. So, after Citizen Kane, he pitched a dramatised documentary to Charlie Chaplin.
Which was
going to be written and directed by Wells. Chaplin was really interested, actually. He was interested in the fact that he was going to star as a character based on the French serial killer Henri Landru.
Henri.
Thank you. But Charlie Chaplin
Thierry Henry.
Yeah. However, Charlie Chaplin.
Sorry, referred to the footballer's name there. It's Henri Landru.
However, Charlie Chaplin did not want to be directed in a film by someone else. So he bought the rights and turned the story into the black comedy Monsieur Vaudou in 1947. Chaplin later declared this the cleverest and most brilliant film of my career, but in a 1960 interview, Wells insisted his version would have been better.
Of course he did. That's so bizarre that he was like, I don't want to be directed by you, so I'll buy your story.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? I think that's an interesting story. And then Wells was like, mine would have been better.
Yeah.
I don't care. 1941, 42 as well, I mentioned this earlier. It's All True, the documentary that he went to do in Rio.
It's
supposed to be his third feature for RKO after Citizen Kane and The Magnificent Ambersons. It was a docufiction compromising of three stories set and shot in Latin America. Wells was inventing it on the fly, and it had already gone through several iterations when a management reshuffle at RKO saw studio support for it and Wells withdrawn, and the miles of footage already shot were repurposed or dumped in the Pacific. So there's some elements did survive. I think one segment survived, and that was actually in a documentary that someone's made about Orson Welles' films.
Yeah.
He had another one called Serrano de Bergerac, but we're not going to talk about that. Another famous one was Moby Dick Rehearsed, 1955. So he loved, I mentioned he put on Moby Dick in London in the 50s. And he loved his staging of it. He absolutely loved his 1955 Moby Dick. It's called Moby Dick Rehearsed. And I didn't know why. But apparently it's because the cast play repertory actors improvising the rehearsal of a new Moby Dick film. New Moby Dick production. So he was going to record it for US television as like a film. He filmed some, but not a lot. Cast member Kenneth Williams claimed the director filmed for just one weekend before giving up. Whatever footage there was, the story goes that it was destroyed in the early 1970s when Robert Shaw accidentally burned down Wells's Madrid home while staying there as a house guest. That's another weird story as well.
I hate to burn down someone's home.
I know. Especially ruining
some
of their treasured items.
Worst thing ever?
Perhaps his greatest unfinished project was one that he struggled for the last 30 years of his life, from 1955 to 1985, and that was an adaptation of Don Quixote.
Oh, really?
He began shooting.
He didn't finish it.
He began shooting in 1957.
Question.
What do you really think about me?
In the newest version of Don Quixote,
yeah.
My understanding is that there's four different periods.
Not seen it, but yeah.
Is this one of them?
What do you mean?
Is Orson Welles filming a Don Quixote part of that film?
No, I don't think so.
Is a director filming a Don Quixote part of that film?
Yeah. Adam Driver, I think.
Yeah, but there's not. It's not named. It's not based on someone.
It's not based on Orson Welles' version. No.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't seen it, though. I don't know that much. Okay. I'm sorry. But Orson Welles did film some of it. He shot most of it, I think. Began shooting in 1957. Mm-hmm. And he wrapped in 1972, and it was still being edited in the months before he died. It was paid for...
85?
Yeah. So 13 years he'd been editing it. He'd been paid
for... He filmed it for...
Well, 15 years.
Yeah.
He paid for it primarily by acting and TV directing gigs. Don Quixote's concept shifted constantly as it was... The unscripted shoot moved from Mexico to Italy to Spain. He was endlessly shooting and reshooting to the point where it took the two lead actors dying for him to finally call cut on the film. So they died and he was like, well, I can't actually film anymore now because they're actually dead. So I'm going to have to edit it. A guy called Jess Franco released an unloved, cobbled-together version of Welles' Don Quixote in 1992. But Welles' film was probably always supposed to remain for him an ever-developing dream. As well as for the rest of us, a tantalising what-if. So basically this guy's taken all the footage and sort of edited and put it together.
I think fair enough, though. It's not around anymore. Yeah. People are intrigued about that film. It took 28 years.
It took 30 years from the conception, like 55. Yeah. So he spent a couple of years and then he started filming it.
I also think that this... Creative people sometimes get a bit bogged down with the perfection of it, but he should have just finished that film for me. If he went doing all them jobs and he went doing all the acting to fund it, he should have just finished it. Sometimes it's just about finishing something.
It's better to finish something than it is. For it to be perfect, isn't it? I agree.
It is. I think you just have to get it out there.
Yeah.
And somebody will love it. I think you just got to finish it. He should have finished it. It's really annoyed me. Sorry, Orson.
He's got a few other ones that he didn't finish.
No, it's not the fact that he didn't finish, Matt. It's the fact he spent 28 years on it, and it took two people to die for him to realise that I actually can't film anymore. I'm surprised he didn't start again. He's that much of a perfectionist, I'm surprised. I admit, I'm a perfectionist, and sometimes when I'm doing something, I'm like, right, ripping it off, starting again. But sometimes I'm just like, you need to finish it. And he should have got that out there. Carry on. Next one.
The Deep. 1967 to 73. Only spent 6 years on this one.
Still a long time, isn't
it? He attempted his own version of it was a novel, Charles Williams' novel. And it was mounted on the sizable salary that Welles had received for an appearance in a Yugoslavian war film. So this is basically what Keith's like. He's like, I'll just take this big check to like appear in this random film and then I can do it.
Was he even a good actor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was filmed off the Dalmatian coast between 1967 and 69. And it was, again, the death of Lawrence Harvey, who starred in the film in 1973, nixed any hopes of finishing the films. This is what Welles said. Though the other actress, Jean Moray, she actually speculated that the film was completed before that, and Welles just simply chose not to release it.
That actually sounds like him. I'm going with her.
Welles actually admitted in a 1982 interview that he thought what he had was no better than a TV movie, which maybe indicates that he had finished it, and he put it together and was like, actually, it's not very good. And the original negative is now lost, although two work prints exist, which I don't quite know what that means.
Maybe it means the script.
No, but I think it's like... The not finished version of it.
Okay.
The Dreamers, another one, 1978 to 85. So this is getting later on in his life. More films that he's struggling to make.
There is a film called The Dreamers.
There is a film called The Dreamers, yeah.
It's on Matt's bookshelf. We're looking at it now.
This was a stab at another adaptation. And it was going to combine this guy's two... Dinnerson, never heard of him, have you? Isaac Dinnerson?
No.
Writer, maybe? Combine two stories to weave a fantastical gothic romance about an opera singer facing an identity crisis. Welles paid particular attention to colour and lighting for the promotional material he shot for the film. He did this quite often. Shot promotional material to try and get financiers interested. But no backers were forthcoming for the project. A company called North Star Production had paid for a screenplay but backed out upon reading it. And that's all. Well, all that exists is a 20-minute test reel of this film.
Where did all this stuff go?
Some of it got burnt in the fire.
Oh, yeah, in Madrid. Because of his house guests.
But yeah, some of it just goes missing. Yeah. Or it gets... We get on to the most famous... Probably the most famous one, apart from Don Quixote. Don Quixote. Which was just caught up in legal battles over who owned it. Who owned these. Because he doesn't necessarily... Because if someone's financing it, they own the actual film, not him.
Yeah.
So, King Lear, 1982-85, again, just as he died. He'd interpreted it for stage, radio and television. Mentioned earlier he did the stage show. Wells, in his final years, planned to direct himself in an intimate cinematic take on the on King Lear.
Is he not too old now to direct himself?
Nah. Dubbing it an anti-spectacle, he was going to film his Lear on videotape, which is still quite new at that time, in black and white and largely in close-up. Test footage was shot to attract potential buyers, but funding never materialised before his death. So now, this is the one which, ever since I've heard about Orson Welles about 10 years ago when I started getting into films, in like when I was about 13, the name of this film has always fascinated me, and it's called The Other Side of the Wind.
This might be where I've got Wind in the Willows from.
Maybe.
I knew there was something to do with wind.
Yeah. It's all come full circle.
It has.
So I'd watched Citizen Kane and I'd seen The Magnificent Andersons, and I came across the name of this lost film and it sort of stuck with me. Anyway, the plan for The Other Side of the Wind was a Hollywood satire with John Huston, tell me if you pick up on it, yes, as an aging director disillusioned with the Hollywood system. Huston's character, after years of exile in Europe, returns to Hollywood to finish his comeback movie, also called The Other Side of the Wind. He's basically talking about himself. He's trying to make a film about himself coming back to Hollywood.
I get it now. Sorry, I was trying to think if there was a film that had that, and I was like, I've not seen many films, and I'm getting stuck.
No.
Sorry, I understand. Of course it's Orson Welles.
He shot it sporadically from 1970 to 1976, but then it got caught up in rights disputes and he never finished it. And the unreleased results would be called the Holy Grail of Cinema. That's what it sort of became known as, this, like...
But it's... Holy Grail of Cinema. There are no unreleased...
What do you mean? So he never finished it because it got caught up because... It'd been like... I can't remember the story, but basically the financiers were from like... Some of them was like a king or like a prince or something. And they got like overthrown and then... He kept having to go to Paris because all his work was kept in like a vault in Paris, and he couldn't get, like.
So where is the film now? What he made from it?
Well, I'll tell you. So, there's a good documentary that came out last year. It's okay. I quite liked it. Called "They'll Love Me When I'm Dead," which is a quote that's been attributed it to him, but not necessarily. He didn't necessarily say it.
Just really? Like Marie Antoinette. One.
Couple of.
Like the cake.
Yeah, that came out last year, and that charts the history of this film, and it's on Netflix. It's really interesting seeing him working and all the problems that come out of it behind the scenes, the way he works.
So it's actual footage of him. And you get to see what he's actually like. Was he difficult?
Did it
make you like him any less?
I don't know if I like him. I don't really know him.
Okay, fair.
But
good answer.
It's interesting, but it's a bit painful. And I mentioned this is what I was saying about earlier. In February 1975, he was awarded the AFI Lifetime Achievement Award. And he used the star-studded ceremony as an opportunity to pitch for funding to complete The Other Side of the Wind.
Right.
And with a touch of irony, one of the scenes he showed his audience featured, he's called Jake Hannaford, the main character, screening a rough cut of his latest film to a studio boss in a bid for end money to complete his picture.
And that's what he was doing.
That's what I was doing. So, one producer, apparently, this is what I read later on, made Wells what Wells would call a wonderful offer of sort of paying for it. But it was turned down, I think, by one of his partners on the assumption that a better offer would come, and it never did.
Oh, my gosh.
And apparently, Wells bitterly regretted not accepting it. commenting before his death that if he'd accepted it, the picture would have been finished now and released.
Probably wouldn't, though. Let's not.
There is a happy ending to it, though.
Oh, go.
And this, again, could be a pod topic on its own, like the story of The Other Side of the Wind, its production, it failing, and then it being released. So it actually got finished. So why have I not written any down? Peter Bogdanovich is the director, and he was in the film, I think, and he's still alive. And he worked with a number of different filmmakers to make a film out of it. And Netflix actually helped out a lot trying to get the original cuts and everything back, all the reels and everything, because it was stuck in this legal dispute.
Yes, and it was still in the legal dispute last year.
Yeah, and
I understand, eventually. And then there was a dispute over the film festival.
That was Don Quixote. That was Terry Gilliam's Don Quixote. Because at Cannes, it got played at Cannes, but then one of the guys who said he was going to put money towards it, this is a completely different film, he won a legal dispute over Terry Gilliam in Paris courts, so then it got pulled from cinemas, but then it got overturned.
Oh, I thought it was this one.
No, but this was a similar thing. This was a couple of years ago now.
Okay.
But they made it. And that's what the documentary is about. The other one I mentioned, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead. And it got released on November 2nd, 2018, to critical acclaim.
That's good.
So finally, it's a bit of a happy note to end on that.
Yes,
after
that's nice.
About 15 unfinished movies.
One of them. Is going to be done.
Well, it is done. And it's sort of seen as a... maybe not the holy grail of cinema, but it got a lot of praise. Really,
I guess, film. It can't be the holy grail of cinema because it's not got Orson Welles' touch on it anymore.
No, it has. It's still like...
Yeah, but it's not... He hasn't finished it.
He hasn't finished. But I'm not sure what the ins and outs of him, of the finished project is. Like, how much is... Did they reshoot a bit of it? Stuff like that.
Yeah, that must be a good challenge.
Mm. But I think most of it was done, if not all of it. Like, he was just figuring it out. So that's my report on Orson Welles, his little life.
Very
his
good
little
report.
Life. His life. I've been his very condescending to Orson Welles.
I feel like you don't like him.
Nah, he's good. He's grubby little mitts all over these. His unfinished projects. Because I did his life and I was like, I really want to talk about his unfinished projects. Because that is a big part of his life, is...
That he's not a complete finisher.
That he just didn't finish a lot of things. But also he lost funding a lot of the time. But it's crazy that a guy who can make the best film of all time can, as he said, come off, like, reach the peak, and then he came down the other side the rest of his career, really, in a way. Do you want to wrap up for us today?
Yes.
We've only got two more episodes left, by the way, of Idiots Talk
only
History.
Only two left. And then we're off on our travels.
Yeah.
We'll have a new podcast. It's going to be called On the Move. You'll be able to subscribe soon, and we'll let you know when. And it'll be on all the usual podcast apps. If you want to get in touch with us before then, though, you can send us an email, idiothistorypod@gmail.com. Get in touch with us on the Twitter at idiothistorypod, and Facebook and Instagram are Idiots Talk History. As always, you could subscribe if you enjoy listening, and... rate us and review us if possible.
Go back. We've got a load of
old
episodes.
And they won't be going anywhere.
They're
going to
stay there, I think.
We hope so.
I hope so.
I'm not checked,
but they should be there.
But we'll have a look.
And let us know if you watch any Orson Welles films, what you think of them.
Yes, do.
Wonderful.
We'll speak to you next week.
Bye. 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 Bye.